The running time for this Rain Hamcast podcast is 16 minutes, 32 seconds. Short pauses for Echo Link and All-Star Timer resets occur every 3 minutes beginning at 2 minutes 50 seconds.
This is Rain Hamcast podcast number 88, posted May 6th, 2023. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. Editing a magazine of any kind can be most demanding and nerve-wracking. Just ask Rich Moseson, W2VU, the mind behind CQ, a ham magazine that has been around for over 50 years. Rich was interviewed in 2017 by Eric Guth, 4Z1UG, who interviews a ham every Saturday for an hour that you can hear by logging on to qsotoday.com. Here's part two of our excerpt from that memorable conversation with Rich Moseson, W2VU.
What are the greatest challenges now to publish an amateur radio magazine in print form today?
It's a challenging time for publishing in general, not just in the ham radio sphere. Most magazines that start up don't make it past their first year or 2 years. The vast majority of them don't. So a magazine that can be in publication for as long as we have is the exception to the rule. You have an interesting situation today with digital versus print publishing, and we do both, of course. There's this perception in the internet world that everything you get online should be free, and that there is no cost involved in producing things for the internet. And that not only applies to readers, but advertisers who think that they should be able to advertise their wares for free on the internet, and that having a website is good enough. The value of your digital stuff is undervalued by all sides. There is this perception that print is going away, which is incorrect. Print still has a lot of impact. It still has a lot of value, and it still has a good future. But it's right now you're find a balance between print and digital, and where's your revenue going to come from in order to keep the lights on. It can be quite challenging at times. You got to just go with the flow and follow where the market is going. There have been a variety of magazines, some very big name magazines, that have gone digital only and then come back to print because they found that they couldn't make it as digital only magazines. And we had that experience too with World Radio Online, which we published for a few years. We found that even at a very low subscription rate and very low advertising rates, we weren't able to cover its costs. So we had to stop publishing that because there were costs. When it was available for free, a lot of people read it. As soon as we started charging for it, the ridiculous price of $10 a year, our readership dropped off precipitously. So that shows how much people valued having that available to them that they weren't even willing to invest $10 in it. It's a tightrope walk, an ongoing challenge, but we're hanging in there.
Well, I think, you know, the proliferation of big smartphones and iPads and Kindle readers and stuff has made reading an electronic magazine more convenient than reading it at your computer. I read CQ magazine electronically because that's the way that it's delivered to me. It's a little bit harder. If I want to highlight something or make a marginal note, it's a little bit more difficult to do that with an electronic reader.
There are benefits and disadvantages to each mode of publication. You know, I get both print and digital. Unfortunately, we haven't been able to ship internationally the print edition for a couple of years now because of market situations. But I find that for some things, having that digital edition handy is just fantastic. Be able to quickly reference something if I want to look something up or have something in front of me while I'm doing something else, then I prefer the print edition. It seems to vary with what it is that you're looking for at the moment.
You're sitting in the doctor's office, you know, being able to pull up the magazine on your smartphone is actually pretty cool. There's a cool advantage to that as well. You don't have to read the doctor's magazines anymore. As an editor of CQ Magazine, you touch a lot of hams, and as a journalist, you get a lot of feedback. What do you think the state of amateur radio is today?
I think that amateur radio is in very good shape overall, but we need to do more work in more areas. You know, here in the U.S., our licensing numbers are higher than ever. I know that's not the case around the world. Different countries need to look at that. And what we need to look at here in the U.S. is how to translate those license numbers into higher levels of activity. If you get on VHF repeaters here, they're often very quiet. That's a challenge. We have a fair number of people with licenses who do not seem to be active on the air. Is a whole quagmire by itself. I've written on this before. Is being active necessarily mean being on the HF bands working DX and working contests? Or are you active if you just get on and talk to your friends on a regular basis? I remember my boss at CBS, who was a ham, and to go back to your early question, being a ham was very helpful in getting hired at CBS because my boss was a ham. Basically, he had a group of friends around the world who got together every Saturday morning on 15 meters, and he had some friends on 2-meter repeaters that he talked to on his way to and from work. And that was the extent of his on-air activity. And there's nothing wrong with that. That was active. Was he a big DXer? No. Was he a contester? No. Is the person who keeps your repeater on the air and functioning well and upgrading the software an active ham? Maybe he doesn't get on the air that much, except to test what he's done and make sure it all works. I say yes, he's an active ham. Is the guy who sits building radios and gets on the air to test them and then moves on to the next project an active ham? Yes, but you don't see him showing up on the air that much. It's not really clear what constitutes being an active ham. So that makes it a little more difficult to approach the challenge of getting more people more active.
If we define an active ham, as you just described, as someone who's a builder and he gets on the air in order to make sure that what he built actually works, I think we need a little bit of all of those things and define active hams as a little bit of all of those things now, rather than just say a guy that works 20-meter DX is an active ham.
One of the great things about ham radio is the incredible variety of pursuits and activities within it that you can be involved with and that other people may not even know exists. You've got some people who are into high-altitude ballooning. I love this example because it integrates so many different aspects of ham radio. You've got telemetry. You've got chasing it. You've got, you know, use APRS. You use 2-meter or 440 repeaters to talk to each other while you're coordinating the chase to find the thing. You've got amateur television sending pictures back down and a lot of digital stuff in there now. This combines so many different aspects of ham radio in one activity. And yet some people will disparage that and say, oh, that's not real ham radio. Real ham radio is whatever you happen to enjoy doing. There are so many of these different areas and aspects of the hobby that there's endless variety, and anyone who says they're bored with ham radio isn't motivated to find something that really interests them. There's all sorts of stuff to do. And if you don't like what you've been doing, okay, find another aspect of the hobby and get involved with that. You will never run out of different things to do.
I got involved in ham radio in the early 70s, just after you did, I think. At that time, ham radio was a short menu, a short list. And today it looks like a Chinese restaurant menu in terms of all of the varieties of things that a person can do if they just start digging deep enough.
You're in the middle of our second excerpt from a 2017 interview with Rich Moseson, W2VU, the mind behind CQ Magazine. We'll get right back to Eric Guth, 4Z1UG's conversation with Rich in a flash. This is Rain Hamcast podcast number 88 for May 6th, 2023. We'll be right back.
You've got the ballooning, you've got satellites, you've got digital, moon bounce. My son, who is a ham, likes to say when people ask, well, what do you see in ham radio? He says, where else do you get to play with meteors?
I saw an article that you wrote in 2012 about the geeks in ham radio. The impression I got from reading the article about the geeks in us is that for some reason, ham radio geeks seem to have like a broader understanding of a lot of things technical. Do you think that ham radio either attracts those kinds of people or does it create those kinds of people? And if it creates those kinds of people, I see your interest in STEM in the public schools now. Do you think that we could create more geeks with ham radio, especially in the early ages?
I think so. I think one thing that we all have in common or most of us, is just an insatiable curiosity. We want to know how things work, why things work. This whole radio stuff shouldn't work if you think about it. You know, you're sending an electric current into a piece of wire and you're making ripples in it. And somebody on the other side of the world is picking up those ripples in a piece of wire and having it come out as intelligence through a speaker, whether it's CW or phone or digital. It doesn't make sense. There's no wires. It's wireless. It shouldn't work, but it does.
It's magic.
Yes. Right? We have a column in CQ on a regular basis called Magic in the Sky. Jeff Reinhardt, AA6JR, writes regularly about different aspects of the magic. You know, that's what I always tell people when they say, well, what's the difference between ham radio and the internet? Why do I need ham radio when I have the internet? I tell them it's very simple. Ham radio has one thing the internet doesn't: magic. If you enjoy the magic, then look at ham radio. And then you can get into all the practical stuff of, well, it works when other things don't, things like that.
You've just nailed it. I've heard it before, but I've always tried to figure out, what can I say to people when they say, why are you still doing amateur radio? You've just given it to me, Rich. And it's so simple, because it's just magic. That would light up their imagination.
If you think about it, it shouldn't work, but it does. That's the wonderful thing about it. And then there's the uncertainty. Another example that I use for people is fish. If you want to eat fish for dinner, go to the supermarket and buy a fish and cook it. Ham radio is going fishing. You never know what you're going to catch, if you're going to catch anything. And there's a whole experience of going fishing that goes far beyond what you're going to have for dinner that night. Than just being out there sitting by a river or a lake and that whole experience. Yeah, there's a bumper sticker that I've seen that, you know, a bad day fishing is better than a good day at work. It kind of applies to ham radio too, especially if you get out in the field. And that's one of the things we promote regularly is getting out of your shack. Taking your station with you into the field someplace, setting up a station and getting on the air from the woods someplace or from the side of a lake and seeing who you can contact with just a few watts and a wire thrown up into a tree. Goes back to the magic of it shouldn't work, but it does. It's so much like going fishing. Even if you spend your day out in the woods and you don't get any contacts, you still had a great day in the woods. And it's kind of like going fishing and not catching anything. You've still had a day out fishing.
That may be the whole bright side of all of the antenna covenants and restrictions that come with the new communities in North America, is that it's forcing hams out into the woods and it's created a resurgence of the QRP movement.
Absolutely. I think that's part of the reason for it. Another part of the resurgence of the QRP movement is that the resurging interest in building stuff, kit building and home brewing, kind of paralleling the growth of the maker movement outside of the ham radio world. There's a lot of us who are tired of things that, you know, no user serviceable parts inside, warranty void if case is opened. And there's people who I've seen at maker fairs wearing T-shirts that say, I void warranties. Along with that whole voiding of warranties, there's this feeling of wanting to get back into how to make it, how to build it, how to modify it. One of the great things that hams have always done is take existing stuff and change it, make it do different things, make it work on our frequencies, make it do something different. That's always been at the heart of ham radio technology, is taking existing technology from other fields and modifying it to benefit ham radio and to benefit what you do in ham radio. And a lot of what the makers do is a very similar thing as well. They're not necessarily building from scratch. Some of them are, but there's a lot of modification going on. And this general wanting to return to figuring out how things work by building them and modifying them. We saw the parallel with ham radio very, very early on as the maker movement started to get popular. We had a maker column for a while. We discontinued because we realized that so much of what we already do in our other columns is related to making, to building things and to modifying things, that it's much of what we do already is there. It doesn't just need a single column for it. Other people, other publications have been slower to see this link and to catch on to it. But as I said earlier, CQ traditionally has been in the forefront of leading toward new activities and new ways of drawing people into the hobby.
And this concludes our two excerpts from an insightful conversation Eric Guth, 4Z1UG, conducted with CQ Magazine editor Rich Moseson, W2VU. You can hear Eric's entire hour-long conversation from 2017 with Rich on QSOtoday.com. That's QSOtoday.com. Episode 147. Rain Hamcast podcast number 89 will post May 20th, 2023, Hamvention weekend. Rain founder Hap Holly, KC9RP, edits and produces this bi-weekly ham radio audio hamcast without monetization. Your PayPal support and feedback on the rainreport.com are appreciated. Copyright 1985, 2023, RAIN, the Radio Amateur Information Network. All rights reserved. Thanks to Tom Shimizu, N9JDI, for posting a not-for-broadcast version of these podcasts via the RAIN Report channel on YouTube. Very 73 from the Radio Amateur Information Network. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. Keep on hamming.